From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Greetings. Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
And our pal Noel is on some adventures, but will return in the future. They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this stuff they don't want you to know. Welcome to the show. You did not have to buy tickets.
That's right. You did have to buy a phone or a computer or something that has a microphone and a processor and at least headphone outputs or some kind of speaker.
Let's call those associated fees.
Yeah.
So the show is free.
But it takes some doing to get it in you.
To get it in your ear, right?
Yeah.
All the paraphernalia is not included. I mean, sure, this is a show. This is a recorded show. Right? Mm-hmm. We do a call-in line. We've taken the show on the road and probably will do again in the near to mid-future. But nothing quite beats the experience, right, of hearing your favorite music or your favorite performance, whatever it is, live, right? Like, what are some of the memorable concerts you've been to, man?
I haven't really been to many. But Dave Matthews, oh, back in the day. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Some of that DMB, baby. Oh, it was the best. And you know what? Tickets were always like okay. They were not insane back in the early 2000s doing some old DMB. Though, you know, you get to, you know, that's a fairly large act, right?
Right.
And then you get to newer shows nowadays. And you're going to a much smaller venue with a much smaller band. And I'm paying more now to see those bands than I did to pay a big ticket band when I was, you know, coming out of high school and college.
Mm-hmm. So, like, you would go see Dave Matthews Band in a stadium or something.
Yeah.
Right? Or something that large. And you would get maybe some reasonable tickets on the lawn or whatever.
$30.
Okay.
Max.
$30 with everything.
Yeah. Just to get into Lakewood Amphitheater, which is not called that anymore, but who cares? And also, you know, inflation, obviously, everyone is saying. Inflation, Matt, but inflation. But that's not all.
Let's call it feeflation.
Okay.
Maybe.
Okay.
Aside from sounding very Dr. Seussian, that is a word that could work for today's episode. Because you know what bothers me about buying tickets? It's probably the same thing that bothers everyone when they buy tickets nowadays. When you buy a ticket for something, you're overwhelmingly going to do it online,
mm-hmm.
or else you're going to show up at a show the day of, you know?
Yeah, it's probably sold out if it's worth anything.
Perhaps, yeah, yeah. And it's relatively rare for someone to be walking down the street, see tickets for a show like next week or that weekend, and then say, I'm going to walk in and buy those now in person. People don't do that near as often. So most of the time we buy tickets online. And here in the United States, there's been one game in town for quite a while. And this game continues in other countries as well. A master, if you will, of tickets.
Oh.
Some sort of ticket master.
Yes.
Wow. It took a while to get to that one. But it's true, right? Since about the late 1970s, it's become increasingly difficult to get tickets to live events, Broadway plays, symphonies, the DMB. it's difficult to get these tickets without running somehow into Ticketmaster, even if you don't know that you're running into Ticketmaster. So what exactly is this thing? It's been here for the three of us, for you, Mission Control, and myself, for our entire lives.
Yeah, and beyond, and before. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's go back to Phoenix, Arizona, 1976. A couple of gentlemen. We got Albert Leffler, Peter Godwa, and another man, a businessman named Gordon Gunn.
What a great name.
Yeah, seriously, Gordon Gunn. So Leffler, he comes up with this name, this idea for a thing. and he calls it Ticketmaster. And it's this new company that's just going to control tickets. And for these guys, when they found it in 1976, really all they're trying to do in the beginning is sell some tickets to an Electric Light Orchestra concert at the University of New Mexico. That's the first big thing. And Electric Light Orchestra is something that my dad told me about, actually, that he really enjoyed. Look it up. Google it if you don't know it. Spotify it. I'm sure you can find it.
Mr. Blue Sky is a great song.
It really is. It really is. But anyway, so this one little thing in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I'm so sorry to interrupt. I have to say.
Yeah.
Turn to Stone is also a great song.
Oh.
In my mind. It's one that I've had stuck in my head.
Awesome.
Anyway, Blue Sky, Turn to Stone. It's the 70s. It's Albuquerque.
At a college. Awesome. Good times rolling, mm-hmm. right? Let the good times roll. And so then they figure out, hey, this is working. We're just, you know, control a hub. We're controlling the tickets to one thing. Mm-hmm. We're good at this. Mm-hmm. Let's keep doing it. So they keep doing it for a few years. Then by 1978, they have their first international clients coming in from Norway, Oslo. Norway. And that same year, they signed their first major venue, this place called the Louisiana Superdome, along with their first major league team, the New Orleans Jazz, which is now the Utah Jazz. But in the city of New Orleans, it was the Jazz. So they actually have the NBA as one of their major clients, one team on the NBA. But still, that's huge for just a couple of guys starting like with a startup, right?
Yeah, and it happens so quickly. It's just a few years. When Loeffler and Godwa originally thought of the company, they were going to be licensing software for tickets, really. And they've gone from that to being the ticket provider for stadiums, which sounds kind of like maybe a boring business, right? It's not as endlessly fascinating as being a professional skydiver,
mm-hmm.
or maybe a podcaster or something like that, you know, an underwater tattoo artist. But yeah. Still, what we have to realize is they get a cut of every ticket sold. And when you get to something as large as a Superdome, that's a lot of money in one night.
Yep.
Other people knew about the game. There were other things that existed at this time. Before Ticketmaster, there was a business called Ticketron, like Ticket and then the movie Tron.
And that's 1960, so it's difficult to – it's hard for me to imagine computerized ticket sales being organized enough with software, with computers that are powerful enough to like do it in any large scale.
Mm.
But it was happening.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't necessarily happening on the customer end, but you would make a phone call to Ticketron and they would have this database, right? So
– can I tell you a fun fact about Ticketron?
Yeah.
They were purchased by – a thing called the Lovecraft Investment Group in 1990.
Shh. What's the Lovecraft Investment Group, man?
All I know is it's Lovecraft. There's a Lovecraft involved. That's all I know.
Oh, boy. Let's see. It's true.
It's the Hewlett-Packard Lovecraft.
I don't know what the Lovecraft Investment Company does, but this may be fodder for another podcast. Here's the thing. As we said, there were other similar creatures around in this market, right? Other places that wanted to be the ticket provider and the middleman for that. But like a hungry invading species, Ticketmaster consumed and digested these competitors. In 1981, it opened its first overseas operation. In 1982, they got a new CEO, a guy named Fred Rosen. Rosen told the LA Times back in 85 that his competitors were asleep at the switch. He said he was an aggressive businessman and proud of it. You got this American Psycho vibe going on, right? He was so good at dominating the ticket industry that it became the only game in town, and other artists primarily, not just wound-up consumers, other artists started to take issue with it. Pearl Jam launched a campaign in 1994 that they called, strong language for some people, Ticket Bastard. because, you see, Pearl Jam was hearing from their fans that they literally couldn't afford tickets to a show, or that they were getting saddled with these egregious hidden fees. And so they said, well, look, man, we want to make a living, but we want our fans to see our music. We don't want to milk them for every penny they're worth. Like, what are we, Kiss? You know what I mean? They don't want to do that. They want to be human. They want to stay human. So they wanted to offer summer tour tickets to fans for under $20. And they asked Ticketmaster, you know, hey, guys, can you just not charge another $20 in fees? Can you actually, like, keep the fees around $2 or whatever that your cost of doing business is? And they said,
no. No. You're Pearl Jam. And we are Ticketmaster. Yeah. So yeah, that, but it's crazy to think about because they really did say no. And Pearl Jam just in 1994 decided, well, it's not worth it. We're not even going to go on tour. We're canceling everything. We're not going to, like, go and play a bunch of empty stadiums where nobody can show up for this, these exorbitant prices. They ended up going to Congress, and guess what? Pearl Jam won, and everything was okay, and everyone was happy, and ticket sales went down to $20 for the rest of our lives.
Thanks so much for tuning in, folks. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Oh, wait. Nope. Oh. Nope. That's not what happened.
What happened?
Ticketmaster won.
Right. And there's one more sordid detail for this story. The band, the members of the band Pearl Jam, maintained and say to this day, you can ask them today and they'll confirm this, that private investigators were sent to snoop around in their lives, sent by Ticketmaster. And having a PI sicked on you by a company, very common occurrence, unfortunately. What they were probably trying to do, what the allegation implies, is that Ticketmaster was attempting to find something discrediting to members of Pearl Jam, not something that had anything to do with their crusade to get better ticket prices. They wanted to be able to say, well, this person is doing heroin and we'll put it in the news if you guys don't straighten up and toe the corporate line. But, you know, again, that's a terrible example because this is the 90s in Seattle grunge, right?
So yeah.
Doing heroin may unfortunately not have been the huge scandal that they would want. But they wanted something to hold over their heads. And eventually, probably more so through just the sheer ungodly amount of money Ticketmaster has, they were able to, as you say, prevail. So that brings us to the modern day. 1997, a company called Interactive Corp, oddly enough, not a video game company, purchased a majority stake in Ticketmaster, and then it bought the rest of the company in 1998. The name changed to Ticketmaster Online-City Search. Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, right?
No.
So they didn't care that it didn't roll off the tongue. The company expanded, diversified. It kept evolving its business model, increasingly going from phones to online sales. And this constant evolution, the way of many businesses, right, unfortunately did not go in the direction that critics wanted it to. They didn't see cheaper tickets. They didn't feel like things were more transparent. These moves did not quell all of the critics. And today, Ticketmaster controls an estimated 80% of the – a little more than 80% of the ticketing market in North America. So they're doing something right. But let's get back to the critics. What are these critics saying?
Well, they're saying that we need to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll find out what Ticketmaster may or may not have been getting into.
Here's where it gets crazy. So it turns out that in addition to being massively successful, Ticketmaster has been accused of numerous abuses, breaches of law, and shady business practices. There's genuine stuff they don't want you to know here. It's probably not going to stop. There's no compelling impetus to stop it. And yes, Ticketmaster has been sued for conspiracy.
Oh, snap, the big C. All right, let's take another time-traveling trip here to 2009. Bruce Springsteen. Oh, everybody knows old Bruce.
The boss.
Yeah, he is the boss. He's your boss and my boss. He publicly calls out Ticketmaster in 2009 for a little, let's say, misdirection, redirection, if you will, from a website. So as fans were going and trying to buy tickets through Ticketmaster to the Springsteen concert, they were getting sent to this other place called TicketNow.com, completely separate site. It looks very different. There's no, you know, when you're on that site, you don't understand what's happening. You feel like a pop-up maybe has occurred, or you've gotten redirected through an ad maybe.
Or this is your last chance to get some kind of ticket to see the boss live?
Well, yeah. There's a certain desperation that's happening when you are being redirected to this TicketNow.com, because guess what? The tickets are marked up by hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars at TicketNow versus Ticketmaster.
Mm-hmm.
So then all these fan complaints are coming through because of this weird steering to this place called TicketNow. A New Jersey congressman gets a call. And basically, this guy says, hey, we need a federal antitrust investigation into whatever the heck is going on between Ticketmaster and TicketNow. What is this? Let's figure this out.
Yeah. So here's what they find. They find that TicketNow, in addition to having a very similar name to Ticketmaster, is owned by Ticketmaster. And when Bruce Springsteen's fans were going to a website to buy tickets to his show, they were automatically redirected to TicketNow, which, as you said, Matt, sells tickets for much higher than their face value. And it preys on that desperation, right? That psychological fear that someone else will get the thing I want. So, you know, I may not necessarily think this is a good financial decision, but I will be gosh darned and golly geed if I allow somebody else to get that ticket. You know what I mean? It's a artificial scarcity, essentially. Bruce Springsteen found out about it, and he was righteously indignant. He wrote a public statement about this, because what he found out was that this sort of second chance or reselling site, TicketNow, was something that Ticketmaster was sending the audience to when there were still regular tickets available. So they could have gotten that, you know, 30 or 40 or whatever dollar ticket to sit on the lawn in the back.
Yeah.
And have a great time. But instead, they were going directly to this place where it was, you know, this huge markup. And that markup goes to Ticketmaster.
Man.
So Ticketmaster gets a 15% cut from TicketNow, which it owns. So that's in addition to the fees it already gets as Ticketmaster. So that money's already spent and baked into the price. So a lawsuit comes about, and essentially what they're doing is making money off the same ticket two times. Clever, you know, brilliant.
Very clever.
Evil, lawful evil. And so – probably because Springsteen himself took such a strong stance against it, Ticketmaster issued an apology to the fans and said, we will refund you the price difference between the face value of the tickets and those you got from TicketNow, which is a lot of, you know, it's a lot of scratch. But that's also like being caught stealing, being caught stealing a car and then saying, I'm going to drive it back to your house.
Yeah.
And then, like, I feel bad.
I mean, oof. Some gas money here, just a little bit of gas money.
Right. There you go. Right. No, they didn't. They didn't give gas money. But it's strange, right? And this is just one of the allegations against Ticketmaster. We've got the Pearl Jam example. But let's talk about those fees, because that's where a lot of this comes back in, right? Have you ever bought a $20 ticket only to find that it becomes more than $40 by the time you get to the actual place your order?
No, never.
No? Oh,
never.
This is
never Tabernacle.
that's a local venue here in Atlanta.
It's not your fault, Tabernacle.
What kind of fees have you run into?
Literally twice as much. I mean, I've seen tickets double when I buy them for just a local venue here because of Ticketmaster's weird fees to get me my ticket somehow that I can print out already.
Yeah, there's like a $2 to $5 fee for getting a PDF essentially that you can print.
Somebody, I'm paying somebody's salary who's just on a floor somewhere making calls like, I need 3 Pearl Jam. I'm like, no, I got 4 Radiohead. No, it's like, it has to be that to justify $20 or $30 fees on top of everything else. Otherwise, I do not understand.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's a service charge, and that will be Ticketmaster's charging you for the privilege of it giving you a ticket.
Yeah.
And then there's the facility charge, which is a charge added by the venue. So Ticketmaster takes its cut, and then the Tabernacle, for example, takes its cut, and then there are shipping, convenience, and processing charges. So that's a charge for, you know, using your Visa, your American Express. That's a charge for having the tickets delivered to you via post.
Wow.
Or using your own printer.
Yeah. But then who pays Cardi B then is what I'm trying to figure out. Like, what's her cut? Everybody else is taking their cut. Where's Cardi B's money?
Unless you're a huge name artist, which I guess Cardi B is now, the amount of money you get per ticket can be surprisingly, alarmingly small because the label will take some money. You know what I mean? Your road crew will take some money and all this other stuff. Craft services, eat that cheese because it's coming out of your cut of the profits, right? But all this adds up to an unpleasant experience for people when we're buying these tickets. The problem is there's not really any transparency with this. Fees between events vary, even at the same venue, and preferences of the artist as well. Some people will try to buck, like Radiohead or Pearl Jam. And the problem with it is that none of this ultimately goes into a situation wherein ticket prices are lower. None of this is meant to, nor will it ever create.
It cannot.
Yes. None of this is meant to create a situation where artists get paid more and the audience pays less.
No.
Absolutely none. If anything, it's kind of like, you know, nobody talks about this, but it's pretty weird that you historically can't buy a car directly from the people who make cars.
That is weird.
It's weird. It's a weird thing. It's normalized.
Yeah.
And I'm not choosing sides on it. But that is something we think about. You know, you can buy so many other things directly from the people who make them.
Direct sales. Mm-hmm. Vertical integration is scary, though, and it can be highly problematic.
Yeah, and it can also be dangerous for the bottom line, right? So the allegation here is that Ticketmaster is sort of a rent seeker. And it's now a middle – it's maybe it needed to be in the process before everybody had a brilliant computer on their phone. But now maybe it doesn't have to be, right? Maybe that kind of software is easier to handle. We don't really know. We just know that they are the largest game in town, and we know that the entire operation is exceedingly opaque. We're going to take a break for a brief word from our sponsor, and then we'll come back with an investigation in Canada that makes this even weirder.
All right, here's where it gets crazier. This is hard for me to understand that this is real. Okay, what we're going to talk about from now, mostly through the rest of this episode, we got from a CBC News investigation that was carried out. And specifically, there's a journalist named Dave Seglins who actually physically went undercover as a scalper at a ticket industry convention out there in Las Vegas. And you can watch video of this online right now if you want to take a break. You can search this up, CBC, Ticketmaster.
New Seglin.
Seglin.
S-E-G-L-I-N-S.
That's good. You'll find it. Check it out. It's pretty crazy.
Oh, could we set some just some axiomatic beginnings here?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, okay, yeah.
So imagine you're Ticketmaster. You make money selling tickets.
Okay.
You want people to buy tickets from you, yeah, definitely, right? Sure.
Does it matter who that person is buying a ticket from you? As long as somebody's buying a ticket from you, right?
Right, as long as the transaction occurs. But you want to be on the side of the people and the artists, and you probably say, hey, at least in public, you say, hey, I think scalpers are the worst, and they take advantage of people.
Yeah, because we want you to have low prices and see all the stuff you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be mad at us.
Right. So it's established then in the public mind, the axiom is that ticket distributors or these middle segments between the artist and the event and the customer, that they should not be down with scalpers. Like, you guys are making it weird. You're making it worse. I don't want to be in a situation where, for instance, there are what's a great event that people would go to today, like a band or a performance or
Alien Con.
Alien Con. They're only it's a one night only 400 seat event, and it's called Alien Con. Who knows what it is? Maybe it's a mariachi band, and Ticketmaster, one would assume, does not care for a situation where one person goes in and buys all 400 or whatever of those tickets in one block and then turns around and sells them for 50% more on, eBay.
Yeah. Basically, Ticketmaster is not down with OPT, right? Other people's tickets, they're like, look, these are the people's tickets.
Right. So that's what we assumed, right?
Yeah.
And it turns
out – That's what they say.
Right. And it turns out that we were very wrong.
No.
Like, cartoonishly so.
They're quite all right with anyone buying their share of the tickets as long as those tickets get sold, and especially if Ticketmaster can sell the tickets twice. What? What are we talking about? Okay, well, let's go back to Las Vegas at that convention.
Mm-hmm.
So Ticketmaster, he's recording Ticketmaster, at least some representatives from Ticketmaster. Maybe that's the best way to say it.
Sure, yeah.
These representatives are pitching scalpers on their Ticketmaster's trademarked professional reseller program that they have established. Okay, now, according to the investigation that you follow Dave Seglins through with the CBC News investigation, Ticketmaster was not only just deciding that if scalping is happening, we're just going to put blinders on and pretend that it's not happening. They're also literally recruiting people, professional people who've been scalping for a long time or maybe are very good at scalping, to cheat the Ticketmaster system itself to expand their Ticketmaster's resale business and, again, to take more money from the people that are just trying to go out and see a concert or an event or something. Mm-hmm. So just to recap, it's Ticketmaster teaching scalpers to scalp Ticketmaster for their own profit, for Ticketmaster's profit.
Yes. Yeah. So they have they've done more than turn a blind eye. They've gotten to a win-win situation with scalpers and Ticketmaster, right? So this is for the average concert goer, this is the part of the movie where the bad guys team up. And one sales rep is on camera saying, I have brokers that have literally a couple of hundred accounts. It's not something that we look at or report, because they wanted these scalpers to feel that they were safe in this. Ticketmaster, for its part, denied the accusations. And once again, you can always go back to the idea that actions by a few people in an organization do not automatically mean the entire organization condones it, right? Tale as old as time. That's what any intelligence agency will say when it's undeniably caught doing something terrible.
Yeah.
I'll be like, well, that guy decided to topple that country on his own, and we always knew that Jeremy was a little bit off.
Yeah, and this is all compartmentalized anyway. Only a very few small number of people knew anything about that.
Yeah, like I'm weirded out hearing about it today, Congresswoman. This is the first I've heard of it. And I've got to tell you, frankly, I am outraged.
Well, you know what? I am too. And I hope you get to the bottom of it. And congratulations on all your work.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll be speaking at Georgetown this coming Friday. It's a one night only. You can.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you can get tickets through Ticketmaster. Or if those are sold out, go ahead to...
Oh, yeah, it is sold out.
Oh, well, go to Ticket Now.
Okay, Tickets Now. Let's see.
So, and scene. So Ticketmaster developed a toolkit for these scalpers. It is a professional... They don't call them scalpers. They call them resellers. A professional reseller program that they launched called...
Used Tickets. Pre-owned tickets.
Certified pre-owned called Trade Desk. Trade Desk is a, quote, web-based inventory management system for scalpers. The company calls it the most powerful ticket sales tool ever. So here's what it allows you to do. You can buy a block of tickets from Ticketmaster through one of its many faces, and then you can upload those tickets to this Trade Desk thing, and then you can just list them again for resale. This means you can hike or drop prices on tons and tons of tickets based on what you think fans are looking for. So it turns it into almost a stock market kind of thing. Neither Trade Desk nor the professional reseller program are mentioned anywhere on Ticketmaster's website. You can go check. We looked. It's not there. It's also not listed on any of its corporate reports. If you want to find the Trade Desk website, you first have to send in a registration request.
So let's go ahead and take a look at what happens if you do get through that registration process. You do have one of these things like an account there and you are reselling things. Let's see what Ticketmaster actually gets out of this whole process. So just as an example, let's say Ticketmaster – is going to sell a ticket for a little over $200, $209.50, okay?
Okay.
That's just the price of the ticket. Ticketmaster itself is going to collect $25.75 just on that initial sale. Now, when the owner now, because we're saying this is through Trade Desk, the owner who's just purchased it through Trade Desk then puts it back up for resale for roughly twice as much as it's the original cost, let's say $400, the company then, Ticketmaster, stands to collect an additional $76 on that same ticket. So again, you're looking at over $100 that you're going to make out of $600 in total of sales.
And at this point, that's legal too.
Yeah.
It's not against the law.
Yeah, and it's just a way to make sure that tickets get sold. At least if you're looking at it from the company's perspective, Trade Desk basically ensures that every ticket is going to get sold in some way from that initial sale.
The idea being that, you know, if you won, that the idea being that the lever moves up and down. So you could lower prices, maybe day of ticket sales aren't where you want them to be. So someone says, all right, now this is no longer $200, it's $150. Let's see what happens, right?
Yeah, and there are strategies that kind of line up with that at the – like towards the end of a concert or something or towards the end of a big game. People – there will still be scalpers outside of a – well, okay. There will be resellers outside of a venue selling tickets for, you know, pennies on the dollar if the show is almost over or something to get people in just to finally make a tiny bit of money on that thing. And that exists throughout these markets.
Yeah, absolutely. We do want to say that while we did mention that Ticketmaster denied the allegations brought by this investigative report, maybe it'll be helpful for us to give the actual language that they used in denying this allegation. What do you think?
Absolutely.
All right. So after the story was published there in CBC News, Ticketmaster issued a statement that went out to CBC News, but then also went out to other places that reported on the story, such as the Rolling Stone, saying it was, quote, categorically untrue that Ticketmaster has any program in place to enable resellers to acquire large volumes of tickets. It also said it had already begun an internal review of professional reseller accounts and employee practices before the CBC News story came out. So they said, look, we've already been investigating this internally, and we would never try to game the system in the way that you're describing. Again, a representative from Ticketmaster is on camera completely doing what they say, what they are denying.
Yeah, the biggest thing that Ticketmaster had a problem with was that representative acknowledged the knowledge that one person essentially would have 200 accounts, right? Or if one entity or one group would have 200 trade desk accounts. That's where the big problem comes in.
Yeah. So is it a situation where the money got too good? Is it a situation where we're finally maybe as the public or the uninitiated seeing into a previously murky world?
That's very possible. I would go ahead and just say it makes me think of something we discussed at the very beginning of a competitive marketplace essentially and having to always evolve, like consistently evolving to make sure that you are making more profit so that you can increase your margins year over year or, you know, increase your percentage overall of gross income year over year. Like having to find new creative ways as a giant company like Ticketmaster and its, you know, parent companies and all that. These kinds of reselling, it's another way to increase those margins that isn't necessarily illegal if you take out some of the things were illegal, but not many, right?
Yeah.
The reselling market, as terrible as it sounds and as bad as it is for consumers such as us, it's just another one of those ways to grab more money.
Allegedly illegal. Well, definitely illegal, but that they allegedly did.
Yes. Yes. Apologies.
Because it hasn't been. I don't think it's necessary. This is just we're just being as fair as we can.
Yes. Right? Yes.
So, as you can tell by the use of the phrase allegedly and the fact that we're being fairly careful about how we discuss this, Ticketmaster has been in and out of court.
Yeah.
In 2018, they suffered a data breach, and in 2019, a British law firm launched legal action against them for affecting up to 40,000 UK customers. And also in 2018, the US Department of Justice launched an investigation following complaints that Live Nation, an event promoter, had engaged in anti-competitive practices following their merger with Ticketmaster. There's an organization called Anschutz Entertainment Group, and they said Live Nation pressured them into using Ticketmaster as a vendor, and had they refused, they would have lost out on business. The allegations of antitrust violations resulted in a reexamination of the merger between Ticketmaster and Live Nation. However, this case is probably going into – well, many of these cases are going into arbitration.
Yeah.
Private settlements. No need to have a shameful day in court. And at this point, Ticketmaster is very little in the way of real competition. There are other things in the market, sure, but they're gnats to Ticketmaster's behemoth, right? And the question then is, I mean, clearly there's some stuff they don't want you to know that's inarguable. It's not necessarily criminal. Like, for instance, okay, think of airline tickets. Depending on which way you go through an airline, or think of privatized insurance, people don't want you to know the lowest price you can get. They want you to get confused and bored and desperate enough to just take the easiest thing.
Yeah.
That is a very clear and unfortunately disturbing explanation of how all three of those industries work.
And really, most industries.
I guess cars as well.
Everyone's just trying to get you to take the easiest option for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on where you are in life.
Time's ticking.
But here's the easiest one for your social strata.
Yeah. Right. You're not looking for Mr. Right Price. You're looking for Mr. Right Now Price, right?
Ooh.
Ugh, no. Swing and a miss.
Start applying that to social interactions. Right. And now it's just, oh, we've gone down a rabbit hole.
I should have quit while we were ahead with the insurance airplane ticket thing. But yeah, it's true. And there's probably not going to be anything that really stops this practice. There will be things that mitigate it. The problem is that the established system has caught up to technological breakthroughs only in the ways that can improve its profit while maintaining its position. The technology that we have now to organize, distribute, and track these sorts of things is amazing. If you were from the 1970s and you looked at it, you would think it was mind-blowing. You know what I mean? Unless you already worked for DARPA or something. Then you would be like, how did that get out here?
Yeah.
But the problem is that even though we have the potential to democratize the access to these tickets in a way that would benefit the creators and benefit the customers, we're not seeing that. When will that happen? When will there be some sort of market disruption? We don't know. And at this point, has Ticketmaster done anything thoroughly illegal? No, they haven't been convicted. None of the CEOs have ever gone to jail. The creators certainly never got in trouble.
Yeah, in 2009, that whole conspiracy suit was out there,
mm-hmm.
but didn't really go anywhere.
Right, right. So the question then goes to us, fellow conspiracy realists, is this just how this business should be run? And what are other businesses that you have seen that your fellow listeners may not be aware of? Like we've seen some strange things going on in the funeral service industry.
Yeah,
we've seen some strange things going on, of course, here in the event and ticketing industry. But where else? I wonder where else is everything just crazy, crooked, appearing to be crooked, I have to say, so that we don't get sued.
Well, to that end, I want to pick your brain, Ben, about the big mechanic industry with some of these bigger companies out there that offer repairs to vehicles and automobiles.
So you mean like not just straight up garages, but box automotive stores that are also garages or service centers. Okay.
Yeah, the big ones that are nationwide. I'd like to talk about some of those, see if there are any conspiracies out there. So maybe if you're listening and you know, have you heard of anything, let us know what you've heard.
I will. That's great. I will say on that note, there is one thing that sounds a bit curmudgeonly for me to say, but I think it's a good point. It's one thing that bugs me about modern car repairs. Over the past few years, cars have increasingly become something that the person who owns it cannot work on. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
There are more and more black boxes proliferating under the hood.
Sure. Absolutely. And just lack of experience, lack of knowledge.
I just feel like, call me old-fashioned, but I feel like if you buy a car, it should be something that you own. That it shouldn't have to be a service. You know what I mean? We're moving increasingly into a service economy. It is going to scare your children listening now when you say, yeah, people used to like buy things and then have them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? For how much a month?
Yeah.
Like, ooh. No. Like you would just buy one sandwich and you would eat it.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to that superpower thing of money and time and I don't have time to work on this vehicle. I'll give it to you and you fix it. Here's some of my superpower.
Or signing an agreement, for instance, that says you are not allowed to have anybody else work on a thing, right? Like Apple has done this very well.
Yeah.
Anyhow, story for another day. Thank you so much for tuning in. We want to hear also your most egregious concert ticket or event ticket fee story. Did you really go into some website thinking you were going to pay $18 and then come out like $30 later, bewildered and confused?
Yeah. Did you try and get into a Foo Fighters concert and then you realized, wait, it's $400? And then you just said, bye.
Oh, man. Yeah. Tell us your stories and share them with your fellow listeners. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We highly recommend Here's Where It Gets Crazy on Facebook, which is our conspiracy group page. You can also follow us, Conspiracy Stuff Show, I believe we are on Instagram. And you can see some of my bizarre adventures on Instagram at Ben Bolin.
Don't look me up on Instagram. I'm on there, but you will never find me. So, ha ha. Take that. If you want to send us – or if you want to call us, you could get your story on the air or whatever you want to talk about. Give us a call. We are 1-833-STDWYTK. You got 3 minutes. Tell us a story in 3 minutes. If you can't do that, just call back and leave another three-minute one.
It helps to write it down in advance for some people.
At least bullet points.
For me, definitely.
Yeah, same, actually. I've done the same. If you don't want to do any of that stuff, you can still contact us. After you go on iTunes and or Apple Podcasts and leave us a review, please just leave us any kind of review. It really does help us out personally and as a show to have more reviews on those systems, those platforms. So doesn't matter how positive or negative, just give us a review. And please be positive. Okay. If you don't want to do any of that stuff, send us an email. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.